Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
Confronting high credit card debt can feel scary. But the good news is, if you owe $10,000 or more in credit card debt, financial relief options are now available. National Debt Relief is currently offering debt relief designed to reduce what you owe, fast-tracking your way to being debt-free. If you qualify for debt relief, you may be able to pay back significantly less than what you owe and save thousands of dollars. Imagine only paying one low monthly program payment you can afford and saving money as you become debt-free. National Debt Relief has already helped bring debt relief to over 550,000 U.S. consumers, earning thousands of five-star reviews and an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau. You're stronger than your credit card debt. Take the first step and visit nationaldebtrelief.com to see what debt relief you qualify for. That's nationaldebtrelief.com.
Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
I meant those blackout motorized shades.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. I installed these and then got some from my mom. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Hall of Fame son.
They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Blinds.com is the GOAT.
Visit Blinds.com now for up to 45% off site-wide, plus a free professional measure. Rules and restrictions apply.
Thank you for calling the Bombas Comfort Line. Bombas make socks, slippers, tees, and underwear made with the highest quality materials. Press 1 for comfort, 2 for style, 3 for donation.
You chose style. Bombas has styles for whatever you enjoy. You can run in Bombas, lounge in Bombas, dress them up, dress them down, but always give back in Bombas. Because with every item purchased, another is donated. Bombas, comfort worth calling for. Go to bombas.com/audio and use code AUDIO for 20% off your first purchase. That's BOMBAS.com and use code AUDIO.
Sports Radio 94 WIP. I'm Tom Kelly with you on a Sunday morning as the NFL draft has concluded. The Eagles finished their draft this weekend. So I adjust my microphone here. End up with a number of intriguing players. And we'll talk a lot about the draft tonight, obviously, and over the next few nights, in all of the next four nights here. So we will get to a lot in regards to the Eagles, how this all panned out, and how you feel about the draft. And I'm really interested to get the input of, you know, the audience tonight. I want to know how you feel about this draft and the overall impressions of how the Eagles came away here. I was on Thursday night after round one, but a number of interesting storylines over the last couple days, including, I mean, we'll get to this video a little later on, the Howie Donahoe video, which I guarantee you that's how Angelo's leading the show on Monday morning. I mean, there's no doubt about it. It's going to be a story. I mean, I'll give you my take on it a little later on. If you want to give your opinion of it, I'd like to hear it. But, you know, doesn't look great considering the circumstances, but we'll get into it more in depth a little later. But when you look at the Eagles as they come out of this draft, and we all know going into this draft, the amount of pressure that was on this organization. They were under an extreme amount of pressure going into this draft to get it right, so to speak. To make the selections that made sense at the time they were making them. Obviously, in the first round, getting DeVonta Smith was a big-time move for this team. And people were very pleased about that on Thursday night. And, you know, with the recent draft history that has happened the last couple of years, how it has all played out with Jalen Reagor and J.J. Arcega-Whiteside and Andre Dillard, even though Dillard, I think the jury's still out on a little bit. And I honestly feel the same about Jalen Reagor, that this team needed to have a strong draft. That they needed to come out of this draft with players that were going to fit and were going to make an impact in the long term. And when I look at this draft in totality, I believe they did that. Now, it will obviously take a long time for us to adequately judge this. I always think it's funny when we give these draft grades out the night of day number three, when we don't know any of this is going to play out. Like, 2 years ago, 2019 draft, I don't remember at the time that being a draft that was controversial. I mean, last year, people hated that draft immediately with Rager and Hurts and everything that went on there. But 2019, the Eagles draft, Dillard, I don't remember that being a real controversial trade up and pick. Miles Sanders, people were excited about. I don't remember a lot of opposition to the J.J. Arcega-Whiteside pick when the Eagles made it in 2019. So evaluating these things right now is very difficult to do. And the honest answer is nobody knows how this is ultimately going to pan out. But as we evaluate it and as we look at it, I believe the Eagles did have a strong draft. I really like what they did in a number of areas. And the DeVonta Smith pick, tremendous. To do what the Eagles did and how they did it was masterful by Howie Roseman. I know a lot of people don't want to hear that, and I know a lot of the opposition. A lot of the opposition to the Eagles draft, I kind of just tune out because it doesn't matter what they do. I mean, the Eagles could have came away with guys who were projected to be first-rounders in the fourth round, and people wouldn't have liked it because it's Howie Roseman making the picks, and people don't like Howie Roseman. I understand that. But the way Howie Roseman navigated that first round was masterfully done. When you look at where they stood at six, you move down from 6 to 12, you end up basically trading a third-round pick, number 84 in the draft, to move back up for a first-round pick next year, and you get the guy that, in my mind, I think the Eagles would have just taken at six anyway. I don't know how you can be opposed to that. Like, the way Howie navigated that first round, the way he projected things to go, was clearly the right projection. I know a lot of people wanted them to stay at six because of the possibility they could end up with either Jamar Chase or Kyle Pitts. You know, our buddy Mike in South Philly had been very upset about the Eagles taking themselves out of that possibility to get one of those guys. Well, Howie evaluated the situation correctly. He thought that Kyle Pitts and Jamar Chase were going to go before six. They did go before six. The Eagles trade down. They end up getting DeVonta Smith, who I think is better than Jaylen Waddle anyway, and I think will be a better receiver at the NFL level anyway. That was a tremendous job by Howie Roseman. And to, you know, not just the trade, obviously. Don't want to overshadow the fact that the player, DeVonta Smith, is a dynamic player. You're talking about the most productive player in all of college football last year. Over 1,800 yards receiving, 23 touchdowns. The year prior, over 1,200 yards receiving, 14 touchdowns. This is a dynamic player that I don't worry about the size. I don't worry about the health. This is a guy that's going to be extremely productive at the NFL level. You know, when you talk about the size, the Eagles had a guy, and no, I'm not referring to DeSean Jackson, actually. I'm referring to Darren Sproles, where Darren Sproles is one of the smallest players in the history of the NFL. In 2017, yeah, his injury started. He played a hell of a long time in the NFL prior to that and did not really deal with a ton of injuries. And if you know how to protect yourself, if you know how to play the game of football the way it's supposed to be played, you can many times keep your body out of harm's way. Some injuries are clearly going to happen. There's nothing you can do about it, but DeVonta Smith is a guy who's been durable in college. There's no reason to think he's just going to come into the NFL and all of a sudden be this injury-prone player. So I absolutely love that pick. The Eagles got off to a tremendous start Thursday night. DeVonta Smith is going to be a home run, in my opinion. Not even, we'll get to later, all the things that he is going to do for everybody else on the offensive side of the ball, how he's going to help Jalen Reagor, how he's going to help Jalen Hurts, how he's going to help Miles Sanders, how he's going to help Nick Sirianni. Like, it is a home run for the Eagles to get DeVonta Smith at number 10. And by the way, you know, screwing over the New York Giants in the process is just such an added bonus. So the first round pick, I don't know how you can have much of an issue with. Day two, we will talk about, but I'm okay with it. And if you disagree with the pick of Landon Dickerson, and that's really the choice here that has garnered the most criticism, I'd say, as the Eagles have moved through this draft process. And I get it. Like, I understand why you would be, you know, down on the Dickerson pick or why you would be concerned about that pick. There were a lot of good defensive players on the board. And to be honest with you, I would not have taken Landon Dickerson there. I would have taken one of those defensive players. I really like Christian Barmore, the defensive lineman from Alabama. I thought he would have been a really good fit to fill a long-term need as a guy who can be that third defensive tackle behind Fletcher Cox, behind Javon Hargrave, and turn into a starter when Fletcher Cox moves on. Trayvon Morrig, the safety from TCU, I really liked a lot. Obviously, Asante Samuel Jr. Like, there were a lot of defensive players on the board there that were interesting prospects, and I would have probably gone that route. But with the Dickerson pick, I understand it. And if you're worried about the injuries, I get it. But there's a lot of upside, and I don't disagree with the overall philosophy. Like, the overall philosophy of drafting an offensive lineman and building through the trenches, I like. Then you see what the Eagles did, drafting a lot of guys on the defensive line with Milton Williams and Marlon Tui Piloto. I hope I'm saying that name right. I'm not sure exactly how I'm saying, if I'm saying that correctly. Teron Jackson, the DN from Coastal Carolina. Patrick Johnson from Tulane. Now, are all these guys going to be difference makers for you? No, of course not. But this is a team that needed help on the line, and they took some chances here to get defensive linemen who hopefully can slot in there. And you look back at 2017, and part of the reason the Eagles were so successful, it was because they had a lot of guys who could play, a lot of guys who could rotate in, a lot of guys who could rush the passer. I like that philosophy. They address the secondary with Zach McPherson, Jacoby Stevens, and then they add a really interesting running back in Kenny Gainwell, the running back from Memphis. And they filled a lot of areas where this team had needs in the long term. And what I liked the most was the fact that I didn't feel like the Eagles were reaching in a lot of areas here. Like, you can make the argument they reach for the Dickerson pick, and I get it, but this is a guy who would have likely been a first-round selection had he not dealt with the injuries. Now, could they have traded down, maybe gotten him 10, 15 slots later, potentially? But obviously, this is a guy the Eagles rated very high, and what encouraged me more than anything, and this is what I said last week, when we had talked about the draft, and we had discussed, what did you want out of this draft? And what I wanted was the Eagles to stick to their board. I wanted them to trust their own process and get the best player. Don't worry about position. Don't worry about need. But draft the guy that was the best player. And Howie Roseman said that was something the Eagles focused on heavily in this draft. Here was Howie after the draft on Saturday.
I think that when we start talking about this draft, I know you guys are going to talk about the things that maybe you look at our depth chart and see that we didn't address. But we wanted to stay true to our board. We wanted to make sure that we weren't drafting for need, that we were drafting for what we felt was the long-term interest of our football team. And I think any time that we were in the draft room over the last couple of days, and Andy can confirm this, we went back to that. We went back to where the guys were on the board, and making sure that we weren't missing opportunities to get players that were higher graded. We don't start playing till September. There's a lot of work to be done on this roster. That's an everyday process. That doesn't end today. And it really won't end up until really the trading deadline when we have opportunities to add to this team. So we'll continue to try to do that. We'll look forward to those opportunities. And just really appreciative and thankful of what we did this weekend with the people we did it. So thank you again.
And, you know, I think it makes a lot of sense. And it that was the most encouraging thing to me, that the Eagles did learn, in my mind, from many of their mistakes, where we talked about the mistakes they've made in the past, and so many of their mistakes have been trying to force a need. Like with Jalen Reagor, they wanted a fast guy, so they took a guy that was fast instead of a better player in Justin Jefferson. With J.J. Arcega-Whiteside, they wanted a big body guy who would take over for Alshon Jeffery, so they took a big body guy instead of taking the best player or a player at the position that they needed, they take a player at a position that they needed, even if he wasn't the best. And that was a problem. And, you know, with all the stories that have come out, all the reporting, all the negativity surrounding this team, one of the most important things, the most important thing going into this draft was that the Eagles were introspective, that they learned from their mistakes, that they adjusted and they saw where they went wrong and they corrected it. And that's what I think they did in this draft. To stay with their board, to not force a selection. Like, the outrage, like Howie mentioned there, the outrage about them not drafting a corner. I like the fact that they didn't force a pick on a corner that they didn't think was better than the players they drafted. If you want to disagree with the players they drafted, sure, you're welcome to that opinion. And I don't necessarily think you're wrong. I mean, time will tell, and we will see how it all plays out, certainly. But the fact that the Eagles stuck to their board, got back to what made them successful, which is taking the best player, building through the lines, and doing what they felt was the best move, not for 2021, but for the future of the organization. It's encouraging to me. And it shows me that in so many ways, and you could see it all over the Eagles offseason, that they have learned from the mistakes they've made in the last couple of years, and that they have changed course. And I loved what they did this weekend. It gives me a lot of hope for the future. I like the defensive lineman they drafted. I like this approach to getting back to building through the trenches. And I think the Eagles potentially, got some big-time difference makers that they can build around for the future. I mean, obviously, Devontae Smith, Landon Dickerson is the big question mark. But I don't necessarily disagree with the philosophy, and we'll talk about that more in the next segment, because I know Landon Dickerson is a pretty controversial pick. That's the one that's outraged people and got people upset, so we'll discuss that pick a little more and why it made sense when we get back. But I want your thoughts on the draft this weekend overall. 215-592-9494 if you want to get in. 215-592-9494 if you would like to join the show. But want your thoughts on the draft. What did you think of the Eagles this weekend? And your big takeaways from the draft. You want to talk about more big picture draft stuff with the NFL and everything that happened in the league. Would love to hear from you. Open line, start the show. 215-592-9494. I'm Tom Kelly with you on a Sunday morning. Sports Radio 94 WIP. Sports Radio 94 WIP. I'm Tom Kelly with you on a Sunday morning. If you want to get in, 215-592-9494 is how you join the show. Want your thoughts on the Eagles draft. And, I mean, what's really, I said it during the crossover with Ricky, what's been, in my mind, a great offseason for this team. And, you know, you can hate on it if you want. You can continue to bash Howie for the mistakes of the past if you want. And if that's the way you want to view it, I mean, that's fine. But, I look at it as we can only evaluate what's being done now. And we can litigate the past as much as we want. And have there been mistakes that have been made? Yeah, obviously there have been. And Howie is certainly culpable for that, as are Jeffrey Lurie, as are, you know, Doug and Carson, and everybody that was here last year is responsible for how poorly that season went. But you look at how this team is now positioned moving forward beyond 2021, they basically have the flexibility to do whatever they want with the amount of draft picks they have, three first-round picks next year, the salary cap space that has been opened up by getting rid of Carson Wentz's contract. More contracts will come off the books next year. I'm sure they'll open up more money. I mean, this team has the resources to rebuild things very, very, very quickly. And when you add a guy like DeVonta Smith to jumpstart that offense, you add through the lines like the Eagles have. It's really encouraging, and it really makes me feel like they were introspective. They did the self-scouting, the self-evaluation they need to do this offseason to change the way they were doing business, which we all knew was necessary. And I think they had a good draft this weekend. And obviously this Landon Dickerson pick is really the one that's being looked at as controversial, and we'll get to that more in a minute, and why the philosophy makes sense. I certainly think if you are worried about the injuries, that's absolutely legitimate concern, and I have my own concerns about it as well, but the upside in my mind of Landon Dickerson makes it a worthwhile risk that I think you can certainly understand why the Eagles took it. We'll talk about that more in a few minutes. 215-592-9494. Get started on the phones with Jim in Dallas. What's up, Jim?
Hey.
Hey, Jim. How are you?
Hey, Tom.
Good.
Tom,
how are you?
Thanks for taking my call.
No problem, man.
Hey, I'm living behind enemy lines. Bad enough. I get it. But, hey, I have a big question for y'all.
Sure.
Yeah, we had 4 6-rounders, 2 7-rounders, and I was looking through the back history on who we've picked in the last 3 years as 6 and 7-rounders. My question to you is, there's a crazy thing I have not heard lately. Nobody's bringing up the name Zach Ertz. You have 4 6-rounders, and if we are truly going to use this year as a building year, why would we not trade all 4 6-rounders, 2 7-rounders based on our history, and then Zach Ertz as a package to move up if we have 3 first-rounders next year, maybe even do a 2nd or 3rd-rounder next year? Why would we not make the move? I mean, why did we sit on our hands and draft an injured guy in the second round?
Well, what trade did you want, Jim? What do you think here? 4 6-rounders and 2 7th-rounders, and Zach Ertz is going to get you into the first round? Like, what do you think?
No.
What did you want to get?
No, what I'm saying is at least move up. If we have 3 potential 1st-rounders for next year,
right?
Why don't we move up and stockpile for the future? Okay, if this year is truly a rebuilding year, my question is, why don't you use some of that stock and some of the other trade? You know, why would you draft a 2nd-rounder who's already damaged goods for at least one more year? Fine, I get it. He's very talented, no question. But why would you not use some of your stock and Ertz if he's already gone? I don't know, but maybe.
He's under contract. He's not gone.
Oh, okay. Well,
yeah.
I've been hearing he's basically going to be shuffled off. So, all right. Well, if he's not going anywhere, then fine. Maybe. Hopefully. Look, I'm an Ertz fan anyway. Let him stay on board. I love him. So let's go.
Yeah. No, Jim, and I appreciate it, man. Thanks for the call. I mean, the thing is, like, trading late-round picks, that's not going to get you anything substantial. I mean, you can like, the Eagles ended up moving, I think, 2 6-rounders and got a 5th-rounder next year. So, that's the kind of thing you're looking at with those late-round picks. And as far as the Zach Ertz thing, I mean, Howie talked about it. Zach Ertz is under contract, and I said last week, I've been saying I feel like a couple months now, why are we just so resigned to trading him? Like, I don't believe trading Zach Ertz at this point makes a lot of sense. Like, I'm glad the Eagles didn't trade Zach Ertz. They don't have to trade him. The whole point to trade him initially was to get under the salary cap. You're under the cap. So at this point, if the best offer you're getting, and do I think the Eagles would have moved Zach Ertz for the right price? Sure, I do. But obviously, they weren't getting offers that they deemed to be worthwhile. Like, and why am I trading Zach Ertz for a 4th or 5th-round pick when I can just hold on to him and he can play for me next year? Like, I don't understand this idea that Ertz had to go. And obviously, he doesn't have to go. And I think the Eagles made a good calculation in holding on to Zach Ertz. And, you know, you talk to him, you let him know that you want him to come back and help be a leader for this team. And I don't really know what choice Zach Ertz has at this point. Maybe the Eagles get a deal in training camp for a pick next year. And if somebody comes calling during camp with a third rounder next year, I mean, maybe you think about that. But I don't know, Dan. I'm not in a rush to trade Zach Ertz right now.
I'm not in a rush to trade him. The whole point, as you mentioned, was to try and get under the salary cap. The only argument I would accept is Zach Ertz is likely not on this team. Like, we're talking about this offseason setting up for 2022. You see it with Landon Dickerson. You see it with the Carson Wentz trade. That Zach Ertz will probably not be good or the main tight end on this team 2 years from now. But you'd be selling on him low to try and trade for a fourth or fifth round pick. I would, you know, try and go get his value up, if anything else, and he could go play for you next year.
Yeah, I agree. And the thing is, and I do think the Eagles, their primary view here is 2022 and beyond, but I've said before, I don't think this team is going to be bad next year.
Oh, it won't be. This NFC East is bad. I think they're not a Super Bowl contender, and we might have a little bit more fool's gold, like they're still in it in December because the division sucks, but no, you're right. I don't think it's a lost season in 2021, but that would be the anti-Ertz argument that I would accept, to say that the next time this team is truly good, Zach Ertz will not be the main tight end on this team, so you might as well get something for him. And if his stock were high right now, I would say go do it, but you're probably right. They didn't get good deals or good offers for Zach Ertz. If they did, he'd be off the team.
Right, and it's not worth it. Like, if I'm not getting a top three round pick for Zach Ertz, a day two pick, I'm not trading him. And I think the Eagles did the right thing by holding on to him this weekend instead of making the move. 215-592-9494 if you want to get in. 215-592-9494. And real quick, I want to talk about the Landon Dickerson thing here, because I mean, there was a lot of negative reaction right off the bat to this pick. And I understand it. I mean, Landon Dickerson, an interior offensive lineman from Alabama, can apparently play all five spots on the offensive line and is a versatile guy who is very talented, but a massive injury history. Four season-ending injuries in college out of the 5 years that he played. But the talent and character of him, along with his talent, you know, all that stuff's off the charts. And he is a player who projects to be, if healthy, the reviews I'm hearing about him are like perennial Pro Bowler. Like, offensive line guys, I mean, whether it's Brian Baldinger or Ross Tucker, these guys rave about it. I'm pretty sure Ross Tucker called him his favorite player in the entire draft. And I understand the durability concerns, certainly. And if that's why you don't like the pick, I totally get it. I have my own concerns about that. But the general philosophy, I agree with. Like, going into that second round, I think the general assumption was, okay, the Eagles got to go defense here. They got to take a defensive player. They got to take a corner. You know, they got to take a safety or the linebacker from Notre Dame, a D lineman. But I thought this entire time, I didn't know if Dickerson would be the guy. I absolutely thought offensive line was a possibility for the Eagles there. Just look at their history. This is how this team has done it when they've been successful. And I don't disagree with the philosophy of drafting offensive linemen years out, because you got to get ahead of that problem. That is an area that you need to stay ahead of, and you cannot fall behind the eight ball with offensive linemen. Because when you do, you see the kind of things that we saw last year. And it's the type of situation where people don't like when offensive linemen get drafted, because they're not sexy picks. They're not exciting picks. And the Eagles drafted an O-lineman, and people will scream about, oh, you're drafting, all they do is draft offensive linemen. But when you don't draft the offensive linemen, you have years like last year, people screaming about how bad the offensive line is. Like, you need to consistently be adding to that spot on the roster so you don't have situations like last year where you're playing a guy like Matt Pryor and you're playing players who don't belong on the field. And it's why, in theory, I don't disagree with the philosophy. Is Dickerson is obviously drafted, in my mind, to be the long-term Jason Kelce replacement, where Jason Kelce, whether it's after this year, whether it's in 2 years, moves on, he will slide into that spot. But in the short term, he will serve a role. I mean, Brandon Brooks has shown in the past he can come back from serious injuries. He's done it a few times. But at some point, you know, that's going to run out. And at some point, Brandon Brooks will not be able to come back from those injuries. He's short-term Brandon Brooks insurance, short-term insurance on the interior of the offensive line, and potentially a long-term solution in terms of a replacement for Jason Kelce. And I get it if your concern is the injuries. Like, if that's your worry and that's why you don't like the pick, then, you know, I'm not going to argue with you on that. But the idea that the criticism that I've heard that you don't like the Eagles taking an offensive lineman because they had needs on defense, that I don't agree with. Because this is not a team that should have been drafting for need. That's the kind of thing that has gotten them in these situations the last couple of years, is drafting for a specific need instead of drafting the guy they think would be the best football player. And I was happy to see them get back to drafting the guy that they thought would be the best football player. Don't worry about your specific need. You'll figure it out. But the draft is about getting the best guy at each slot you draft at. And if you move up, you know, you a player like Devontae Smith, you see worth it to move up for. You move down. You like a guy like Milton Williams. You can get him a few picks later. You take him at 73. But the overall philosophy of building through the offensive line and drafting insurance that position, even if it doesn't fill an immediate need, that I agree with. The injury history, though, I will concede with Landon Dickerson, is certainly concerning. And if that's your worry, if that's why you don't like the pick, I get that. But if you just don't like the pick because the Eagles had defensive needs and they took an offensive lineman, that I don't agree with at all. Because overall, drafting offensive linemen and solving those offensive line problems years ahead of time is usually a pretty good philosophy. 215-592-9494 if you want to get in. 215-592-9494. Very excited next segment to talk to our draft expert, Tony. I really want to know how Tony feels about this draft from the Eagles' side of things. We'll talk to Tony next, and I also got to get to the Phillies, who have had a couple very entertaining games with the Mets this weekend. Very frustrating one on Saturday night in which the umpires botch another game, which has been, the umpires have been way too big a story at this stage of the MLB season. There's no doubt about that. 215-592-9494. Open lines if you want to get in. I'm Tom Kelly, Sports Radio 94 WIP. Sports Radio 94 WIP, I'm Tom Kelly with you on this Sunday morning talking about the Eagles draft. And I was very interested when the draft concluded. You know, I'm seeing all these report cards. Everybody gives out the report cards for the draft. And there was only one person I was really interested in hearing his report on the Eagles draft. And Dan, I think you know who this is, our draft expert, Tony. I was hoping Tony would call in tonight because I got to get his take on all things Eagles draft.
Well, there's two people you want to hear from, Tony and Weave, of course.
Weave, yeah, Weave.
We got to get his draft report card.
I actually thought Weave did a good job evaluating the Devontae Smith pick.
It was a great call the other night.
It was.
But no, I'm interested to hear Tony, too. I was talking to him a little bit in the break.
Okay.
So I think you'll like this.
I don't think he got a lot of, the Eagles got a lot of the guys he was giving me, but we'll see. Tony, what's going on, man? What are your thoughts
on the Eagles draft?
Good, man. How are you doing?
that everything is okay. I know you got to have that vaccine. I hope you're doing okay.
Yeah, I'm doing well. I didn't feel great the day after, but I'm doing fine now.
Yeah, that's good, man. I'm glad because I decided against it. So maybe you can encourage me to go get it.
Yeah, I mean, feel good, and I would personally recommend it, but you know, you're cool.
That's great. I'm thinking about it. I'm up in the air. First, let me say that I had to get my personal feelings out the way, and a lot of my guys were on the board when it came time to pick, and I'm like, what are they doing? And when I seen the scout thing, which, I mean, he disrespected Donahoe. Like, come on, man, give the guy a pick, you know? And that guy was on my board, too, Aaron Robinson out of UCF. He was right there. Milton Williams was on my sleeper list. He should have went in the fifth or sixth round. Nobody was running to get – the kid is a beast. Don't get me wrong. Do not get me wrong. Now, the first round
– the thing I saw, Tony, I think it was Dane Brugler of the Athletics list, he had Milton Williams ranked 70th. So, you know, that tells me that Milton Williams went about where you know, he could have gone. I mean, I don't think it was a terrible reach there.
You're right, and he's a monster. He needs a little bit of technique work, a little bit of stiff on the upper body, but – he's a beast.
Okay.
And also, let me just say, Landon Dickerson, I was concerned about his injuries. I was going for Creed Humphrey in like the fourth round, but I'm glad they got the best center. So in that regard, I'm happy. Asante Samuel Jr. was there. A lot of other people were there we could have grabbed.
No,
including go ahead.
No, Tony, I was just going to ask you. I heard Brian Baldinger compare Landon Dickerson to Quentin Nelson. Do you see any legit comparison there between those two?
Yeah, he's a monster, man. Talking Pro Bowl. We're talking about multiple Pro Bowls and multiple awards. If he can stay healthy,
right?
The guy is a brick. He can't move him. He's too big. He's a monster. He's a machine. But the question is his knees.
Right.
So is he okay from the ACLs? Other than that, they got the best center on the board. So I'm okay with that. Now that I've settled down, I'm okay with that. The third round pick, they should have picked Jabril Cox. He was sitting right there. And the fourth round, they could have had Aaron Robinson, who the draft guys actually wanted. But, you know, they picked Milton. They could have got him in the fifth round.
Well, what do you think of this kid McPherson, Tony? You like him at all?
I like him. He can play, and he can hit, and he's fast. I didn't know anything about him, really, because, you know, I was going for Andre Sisco, who was still on the board.
Yeah, I was thinking about him. When he went, Tony, I was thinking about you. Yeah.
But then I appreciate that. Paris Ford, sitting right there. You had the Syracuse receiver. I'm sorry, the Syracuse cornerback. And also you had multiple other cornerbacks that were better. But I didn't know a lot about him. When I seen his tape, he's tall and he's fast and he can cover. So they got somebody there.
Now,
I didn't know a lot about him, but I like the pick.
Another guy I want to ask you about, I'm hearing a lot of excitement surrounding this guy, Tony. Kenneth Gainwell, the running back from Memphis. What can you tell me about
him? Oh, yeah, he can float, man. I heard a little bit about him. I watched a little bit of tape on him. He wasn't my pick. I wanted Master Teague, but I like him. He's fast, and he got a burst, and he's hard to tackle.
Okay, sounds good. Well, how about this, Tony? You wanna take the night and then give me over the next couple nights whenever you can call your thoughts on the next couple picks here?
Definitely. Let me just say they got my man Jacoby Stevens.
Yep.
They at least did me that favor. You hear that, Mike? They got my man Stevens. I told you. And also, they announced him as a safety, but the Eagles are going to put him at linebacker.
Yeah, they're going to play him at linebacker. So, all right, Tony, we'll talk to you later this week, and you can give us
all right, take care, y'all.
All right, take it easy. So, yeah, we got to spread Tony's thoughts out, give him enough time over the next couple nights here. But, yeah, this Tony and Mike Angelina rivalry is really
they have a rivalry?
Something I enjoy. Yeah, well, Tony, that wasn't really a shot, but Tony's taking a couple shots at Mike here and there, which I'm fine with. I mean,
Has Mike chimed back?
No, not really. I mean, Mike's kind of mild-mannered
guy. For a true rivalry, I think Mike has to chime back at him, though.
Really, the only person that Mike will rip on the air is me. Like, other than that, Mike really doesn't rip anybody
sometimes
on the air.
When he's load managing, though.
Yeah. So,
so he'll rip you, but sometimes he still ducks you.
Right. But you know, Michael ripped me on the air. I think I'm stuck with him the next few nights. But Yeah, so Tony seems to like the picks, but there are some other guys he would have liked. But and we'll go through all the selections later on. But I do like the Eagles building through the trenches, and this is something that, I mean, it's what they did when they were successful. And I see in this draft, I see a lot of the Eagles getting back to what made them successful. Getting back to what made them successful under Andy Reid, and getting back to the 2016 draft. I see a lot of similarities where, you know, they draft Wentz in the first round, but see, it's kind of a similar thing. Like, they trade up in the first round to get their guy. They go up, get Carson Wentz, obviously different than going up to get Devontae Smith, but you go up and you get the guy that you targeted, the guy that you wanted. You look at the rest of that draft. You know, not the sexiest picks, Sayamalo and Vitae, but look at what those guys panned out for you. And that's why offensive line is so important, is nobody was excited when the Eagles drafted Vitae in the fifth round in 2016. I certainly wasn't. It's a very scary story. Not scary, but I was doing updates, and the Eagles had drafted Vitae, and I had an update in like 30 seconds, and I had no clue how to say this guy's name. I totally butchered it. I wish we still had the audio from 2016. I don't think.
And you didn't know Big V was the nickname yet.
Right. And I, you know, when you're doing updates, you try to be a little more, you know, newsy and professional.
Sure. And you're like, this guy, Vitae.
You seem like you have a good update voice, Dan.
I appreciate that. Yeah. I've never had the opportunity to give it a try. I did it a little bit in college.
Okay.
But you're right. I don't know how I would have come across with Halapulivati Vitae in 30 seconds.
I had no clue how to say it.
And some of those updates, like, you got to be fast. Like, just read it off the screen, give it your best shot.
Right. Well, I mean, I was trained by the best in Rob Cherry, but
of course,
Vitae, like, that pick helped you win a Super Bowl. You don't win a Super Bowl without Vitae. And that is kind of my thinking with why I'm okay with drafting depth on the offensive line years ahead of time, because these guys will be useful. We saw last year with the injuries, the Eagles had to play a lot of offensive linemen. They did. And these picks are going to end up being players that are going to play. Now, again, the Dickerson thing, the injury history is concerning. There is no doubt. But I think the upside does make it justifiable. I'll say that. And other than that, I like drafting D linemen. I like building your team that way and not focusing overly on drafting a corner. I actually see as an encouraging sign. If the Eagles had gone out and forced a corner in round three with this Aaron Henderson, who I've seen tape on him, I'm not in love with him personally. If you go out and you force a pick like that, that would have concerned me. That would have been like, okay, they didn't learn their lesson. They're still drafting for need right now. They're still trying to maximize 2021. They're not looking at their long-term issues. But instead, you draft a defensive lineman, and they continue to draft linemen and guys who can get to the quarterback and do a lot of different things up front. I think that's the way you build your football team. 215-592-9494. Let's go to Bill in Folsom. What's up, Bill?
Yeah, you know, if they had just re-signed Big V, that would have saved them from wasting a couple of really high draft picks.
Well, I mean, Big V got $50 million, Bill. I mean, I think he got overpaid pretty significantly. I don't think the Eagles could have afforded that.
Yeah, the tackle that we kept, that gave us all the drama, the old guy that we, Peters or whatever.
Yeah, that was a mistake. Bringing him back was a mistake.
He's been a waste, and he was almost making as much. So we didn't really save that much by not signing Vitae. We could have gotten rid of him 3 years earlier. Anyway, you know, I worry about Howie being so obsessed with all these acquiring six-round draft picks just to move up and down. He spends so much time on the phone. He's got to be spending more time on the phone with these other GMs trying to screw them out of a six round pick than he is analyzing the draft board. I'll bet that he spends more time on the phone than any other GM by a mile.
Why is that a bad thing?
Because you only got a certain amount of time in a day. He should be spending the time analyzing the relative merits of all these different picks as the board keeps changing. He's taking his eye off the ball to try and acquire six round draft picks.
Well, who didn't they get that you wanted, Bill?
Well, from what Ray Didinger said, the reason why our top scout was so mad is because we moved down three spots to acquire a six round pick, and we lost a big cornerback in that spot.
Well, that tells me that they probably weren't going to take that guy anyway. Like, and obviously. There was a disagreement there, and Tom Donahoe did not agree, but that tells me that, you know, they all got together and ultimately they decided they weren't going to take that corner anyway.
Well, I just worry about having a GM that's so obsessed with moving up and down and back and forth, up and down the draft board, and not keeping his eye on the ball. As far as I'm concerned, that's a huge mistake on his part, constantly trying to acquire an extra draft pick here and there. It doesn't amount to anything. Most of these six-round picks are going to get cut anyway.
Yeah, no, I got you, Bill, and I appreciate the call. I mean, the Eagles did trade 2 six-round picks for a fifth-rounder next year, and I know people don't like, you know, the trading and stuff. I mean, I think it's useful. I mean, you look at the fact that, according to most of the draft experts, which I am not, like, I don't claim to be a draft expert in any sense. Apparently next year's draft is supposed to be much deeper than this year's draft is. So trading 2 six-round picks for a fifth round pick next year, I don't think is a bad way to go. But we'll get to the Donahoe thing when we get back. I know we have gone too long without getting into this already. We'll talk about it when we get back. Also, I see Mike in South Philly's there. I want to talk to Mike and see how Mike is feeling after the Eagles draft, because the fact that they didn't have an opportunity at Ja'Marr Chase, I want to know if Mike feels a little better about Howie. I would guess not, but we'll see. But we'll talk about all that stuff when we get back. Also see Jay's on the line. I'm Tom Kelly, Sports Radio 94 WIP. Sports Radio 94 WIP, I'm Tom Kelly, and we have gone too long without talking about the big story of the weekend, because it really, what would an Eagles draft be without some sort of controversy? And it's so funny, because this is the exact kind of thing they were trying to avoid this weekend. I honestly do feel like the Eagles wanted to get out of this draft with just minimal, you know, criticism and just minimal controversy. Just get out of the draft. You get the guy people want in the first round, Devontae Smith. Have kind of a boring draft. And then comes Friday night. And regardless where you stand on the Eagles front office, where you stand on Howie Roseman, the video is objectively hilarious. Like, it is pure comedy. You always see these videos where they show guys going around the draft room and everybody's celebrating and fist pumping. And this is generally the way it's supposed to go. I've obviously never been in a war room, but from what you hear, you have disagreements. They get flushed out and come to a consensus. Once the pick is made, everybody moves on. You go about with your draft. Well, Tom Donahoe, senior advisor for the Eagles, clearly was not over the fact that the Eagles, now I believe Howie had said, I don't think we have the sound, but that Howie had said this was because the Eagles traded down from 70 to 73 and there was a player that Donahoe had wanted in that range. And I'm guessing it is Aaron Henderson, the corner. Now, if you are trading down and not getting a player that you want because you traded down, then yeah, I don't think that's a good trade. My thinking is the Eagles came to a consensus, and the consensus was they were going to take Milton Williams over Aaron Henderson at 70. And Donahoe obviously didn't agree with that. Now, you know, this is captured on video. It is not a good look. You look, there's another vantage point where on the other side of the room, Jonathan Gannon, the defensive coordinator, he's all fired up. He's pumping his fists. And obviously, Donahoe was not on board with this pick. And my stance on this is that this is not, in reality, a big deal. Like, I believe this is something that probably happens in war rooms every year amongst most teams in the NFL. But for this team, it is not ideal that it got out there. And it will absolutely be made a big deal this week. Like, I'm not naive to that at all. I guarantee you, the morning show probably starts with it on Monday. I mean, it probably will be the big story on most shows on Monday. And we'll talk about it here as well. But in reality, I don't think it's a big deal. But it will be made into a big deal. And for this team that was trying to avoid any sort of controversy like this, especially with the stories about having issues with collaborating, it's not good optically that it got out there. Dan, what is your take on the whole Donahoe fiasco? I don't know if fiasco is a little strong, but the whole video from this weekend.
It's a big deal because we know about it. Like, that's the only reason it's a big deal. I agree with you. This happens on every single pick in the NFL draft. You can't tell me that front offices are always on board. Sure, when it comes to a guy like Trevor Lawrence, I'm sure everyone was on board in Jacksonville with that pick.
And they've had months to
And they've prepare. Had months to be on board with right. it, right? When you get into the second and third round, you're telling me that every single team in the league, everyone's on board. When you have offensive guys and defensive guys and you have to decide which one you're going to use it on, you're telling me that all the offensive guys are on board when the GM stands up and goes, we're going defense here?
Well,
absolutely not. And in this particular case, the only reason it's a big deal is because we know about it and everyone at the station and everyone around the world and everyone on Twitter knows about it. And now poor Milton Williams has to go his entire Eagles career knowing not everyone was on board with the pick.
Right. And it's a hilarious video.
Oh, like, it's objectively hysterical.
It is great.
Because he couldn't even fake it. Like, he knows he's on camera. He knows ESPN and NFL Network has a camera in the war room. He can't play the, oh, I didn't know we were on thing.
Right. I was with my brother-in-law today. He hadn't seen it. I showed it to him. He was cracking up. He thought it was hilarious.
Howie's reaction to the whole thing is great. He's like, he goes to fist pump him and just doesn't get it. And he's like, what?
Well, I think that's Howie, you know, knowing the way it works. And normally, you know, people do move on after that pick is made. But what's going to be part of what's a big deal about it too is right before he goes over to fist pump. I think I said pimp there. That's not what I meant. But to fist pump Donahoe, he fist bumps a gentleman who I believe to be the infamous Alec Hallaby, and Alec Hallaby looks rather happy. So that's what this will be made into this week. Analytics and scouting, the old school football
versus
guy.
The new school.
Right.
You know what it reminded me of? You remember the Seinfeld episode where they're getting the bad shower pressure and
yes.
Kramer and Newman are looking for the shower heads and they stick their hands in and Jerry sticks in his pinky? Like, that's Tom Donahoe.
Yeah.
He's like, I guess I'm in, but he's really not on board with it, and it got caught on camera.
That's good.
That's the analogy I thought of.
Yeah, that's pretty funny. That's a good one. But, yeah, if you want to give your thoughts on that video, it's a funny video. In the end, do I think it means a whole lot? No, I don't. Is it good for the – I mean, but it's certainly not good it got out there for the Eagles this weekend. Probably the last thing they needed. 215-592-9494. Let's go to Mike in South Philly. What's up, Mike?
Yeah, how's it going, Tom?
What's going on, man?
Yeah, so, you know, my feelings about, you know, the players that I want to decide, I can separate my personal feelings from, you know, objective analysis. And, you know, I'm not going to say that I'm happy because, you know, whenever you don't get the guy you want, you're not happy regardless. You know, if I were general manager, I would have tried to trade up for Chase. But regardless of that, from where they were picking in the situation that they were in, I think they had a pretty solid draft. I think the first two draft picks have a chance to be 10-year pros with multiple Pro Bowls. And I'm actually, you know, I always call it like I see it. If Howie does something good, I'll praise him for it. I just don't think he's done a lot of good lately. But I think, especially at the top part of the draft, with the picks, you know, where they were slotted, they made solid picks. And I actually, believe it or not, I actually liked the Landon Dickerson pick.
Okay.
I actually would have preferred. Now, obviously, this is going, we have no idea what his health is going to be. So there's a lot of hindsight wrapped up in here. You know, if he tears his ACL the first week of the season.
Right.
Then, but I think the second most important part of a football team, besides obviously the quarterback, is the offensive line. The quarterback's the most important. So the second most important thing is protecting that quarterback. And I think that Dickerson is a guy who has, you know, 10-year starter, five-time Pro Bowl potential. I think he's an absolute mauler. I think he's a beast. I think he can play multiple positions, which is versatility is very important on the line. Some guys, as we saw with Dillard, are not comfortable playing at other positions. Remember, he was whining about the hand placement. I was like, that's when I knew that when that guy was going
to
be a ball.
Right, right, when he had to play right tackle against Seattle.
Yeah. Dickerson can play all over. I think he's a competitor. He embraces that kind of stuff. He's a very popular guy within his teammates. So he's kind of keeping the trend, how, you know, how a lot of leaders right now on the Eagles team happen to just be on the offensive line, guys like Kelsey and Lane. I think he's going to kind of take over the mantle there when those guys step down. And I understand why people are concerned about the injuries. Totally get that. I can't dissuade somebody from thinking of that. But if, and I don't know if this is the case, obviously we don't have access to their draft board and their war room, but if they graded this guy as an elite offensive lineman and say they graded Asante Samuel Jr. as just a good cornerback, then you take the guy that you grade as elite.
Yeah.
Even if it might not be as an immediate need, because next year, Tom, we might not have Brandon Brooks or Jason Kelsey. They both might be gone. And then you're going to go, oh, crap, maybe we should have taken a lineman, because while an offensive lineman may not be the bigger need right this second, a year from now it may be.
Yeah. No, Mike, and honestly, it's probably the thing about this draft that encouraged me most about this team moving forward is the fact they weren't overly focused on their needs. You know, the fact that they weren't so focused on, we got to get a corner who can start this year, even if he's just going to be slightly above average. Like you said, if you have one player on your board at a position of need that you project can be good and another at a position that you're deeper at but can be great, you take the great player and you take the great player pretty much every time. Obviously, there are certain, you know, possible exceptions if you're like a player away. But yeah, generally you go that route. And you look back at that 2017 team, I think every year we get more removed from it, it's clear that team won the Super Bowl because their offensive line was elite.
Yeah, absolutely. And I just think Dickerson's just a stud. And also, like, I'm not as worried about injury history with an offense. In fact, the offensive line is probably the position I worry about injuries the least, because it's not like he's going to be running routes and cutting and jumping. Like, he's just, there's, like, usually, like, when offensive linemen get hurt, it's when somebody rolls up on their leg. Now, I don't remember off the top of my head what type of situations he got injured in his career. I don't remember all the plays. But I mean, you hope that it's just one of those things where he just had a streak of bad luck and he's not, you know, made of mashed potatoes. And, so hopefully he stays healthy. But I do think the first two picks have, you know, 10-year starter, multiple Pro Bowl potential. And obviously Devontae Smith is a great player. I think he's the best receiver that they've drafted, I think
since
he
Macklin,
certainly has
probably
a better college resume than DeSean Jackson did when he came out, and Jeremy Maclin. So obviously, without having seen him play it down yet, and just in terms of what they did in college, he might be one of the most talented receivers they've ever drafted in the history of the franchise.
Yeah, definitely. And you look back, Macklin's really the last good receiver they've even drafted in any round. Probably the best receiver since Macklin they've drafted is Aguilar, and that tells you enough about how much they've struggled there. And I agree. And I don't know, Mike. Like, I don't want to know what you think about this. Obviously, he had a bad first year, but I think Smith has the potential to make Rager a lot better as well.
Yeah, I mean, and I think a lot of that too is going to be what kind of Coach Sirianni is. You know, can he scheme these guys open? You know, a lot of that, honestly, Tom, a lot of, like, for example, I said before, I think the Eagles could be one of the worst teams in the league this year. But if Sirianni is legit, like if he's a young stud coach, then that could tack a few wins onto their season, and all of a sudden they could be maybe fighting for a wild card spot. Who knows? And then you know that would obviously affect how Jalen Hurts plays as well. So I think that's going to factor in as well. And until we see what kind of coach Sirianni is, I don't think I can really give an informed opinion on what type of year I think Reagor could have. But right. I certainly think playing next to a guy like Devontae Smith, assuming he is the real deal, like he was in college. And by the way, like he legitimately, and this isn't being a homer, but it's like this is like object. Like he had one of the best college football seasons of all time for a receiver. Like he had like 120 catches, almost 1,900 yards, 25 touchdowns, and in the biggest game in the national championship game, I think he had over 200 yards in the first half and 3 touchdowns. Remember, he pulled like a quad or something, he had to leave. I mean, he was on pace for like over 300 plus yards.
Yeah, no, he's a monster, and he had a big game against Notre Dame in the playoff prior to that as well. And I mean, you know, I get. People can be concerned about his size, but bottom line is he wasn't hurt in college, and I'll take a guy who was that productive in that conference any day. I mean, a guy who can put up those kind of numbers in the SEC doesn't do it by accident.
Yeah. I mean, look at Doriel Green Beckham. He was big. He was like 6'5", 6'6". He was terrible.
Right.
Our Sega Whiteside sucks. They're big. I mean, you know, just get open and catch the ball. And by the way, he's pretty long, so like he's lengthy. So, I mean, it's not like, you know, he is like short arms. So like, I think, it's not necessarily his height that's the problem. It's his build. But, you know, I mean, you know, DeSean Jackson's build wasn't big and, you know, it wasn't, his injuries weren't impact injuries really per se. He had a couple of those, but his were usually soft tissue injuries. I think Devontae Smith has a chance to be really special. I think the other picks, I mean, you know, once you get down past like the third round, it's a crapshoot anyway.
Right.
But I was fine with the players that they took. It wasn't like I was like, oh, my God, they had to take this guy. You know, I think they did a pretty decent job. But for that one incident that happened, first of all, I thought it was funny.
It was hilarious. I mean, it
because,
was hilarious.
You know what the funniest part of it was? Like, Howie, you know, he had six hands. I'm like, what? And then he stops for a second, and then he realizes, crap, this is on camera. And he looks over at the camera.
Yeah.
And but the thing that I don't get is, right, like, they're obviously, at least you would hope anyway, that they're discussing this stuff while they're on the clock, right? They're debating it amongst each other. Well, if they're doing that while they're on the clock, if they're all debating it with one another, then wouldn't Howie have already known that Tom Donahoe didn't like the pick? Like, he seemed shocked. Like, remember, he fist bumped him, and then Tom Donahoe said something to Howie, and he stuck his hands out like, what?
Well, I think, Mike, I think there's a general rule, at least from what I've heard, that once the pick is made, you all move on. And I think that's kind of what surprised Howie is, even if Donahoe had a differing opinion from most of the other people in the room, I think Howie expected that Donahoe, you know, being a professional, would move on after that, and he didn't. And again, I think you're exactly right. I think Howie knows there's a possibility this stuff's being televised at all times, and I think immediately he's like, oh, crap, this is not going to be good.
Yeah, and you noticed that I don't think Tom Donahoe was in there on Saturday. I think they took his keys away from the war room.
Yeah.
Like, because they showed some of the clips of it,
right.
And all of a sudden he just happens coincidentally he's missing from the picture again.
Right.
So maybe Howie put him on you know, cafeteria duty for that day or whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're right though. Like, look, is it a big deal? Probably not. But when you have that coincide or just come, you know, not too long after the stories from Jeff McClain that there's a lot of communication issues and stuff like that. You know, it does make you wonder that, like, you know, look, you're probably right that they maybe have been introspective and fixed some issues, but at the same time, there's always something in the back of your head that makes you go, like, Howie's like, all right, this is going to be the pick. And everybody has to go, yes, Howie, that's the pick. And then, but the deep down, they don't really like it. You know what I'm getting at? Like,
no, I do, Mike, and I appreciate it, man. Thanks. Yeah. And I think that's the thing. Like, even on a – like this – that's what's got to be so frustrating for the organization is this should, by all accounts, be a positive weekend. Like, there should be positive reaction to this pick. You got Devontae Smith. You got one of the best prospects coming out of college at a position that is exciting, a player that is exciting, that should be great. You know, if people have some issues with the Dickerson pick, okay, people will complain about it a little bit and you'll see, but if he ends up being great like you think he's going to be, everything's going to be fine. But this is exactly the kind of thing that they did not want to happen. It is amazing how the exact kind of, especially with all the, you know, the athletic story and the McLean story, all the things that they were trying to avoid and, you know, temper down and say, this isn't really a thing. Then they get this video. It just couldn't be more of just poor timing.
The only thing that could make it worse is if Aaron Robinson turns out to be really good and Williams turns out to just not really do anything.
Right.
And then everyone's going to be like, Donahoe knew what he was doing.
Exactly.
And this is going to live on. But I'm actually with Mike. Like, get on board with the pick.
Yeah.
Be a team guy. Be a sport.
Yeah.
You know, don't throw a temper tantrum on national television.
Yeah. So it is, man, it is, it just crazy. This team, it's always crazy.
It feels like an on-brand thing to happen this weekend. Like, it couldn't just go smoothly, right?
Some with day two of the draft. I mean, look at last year. Everything goes wild with the Hurts pick.
Well, they had to know that was
going
to happen, though.
But it's just...
That was planned.
Well, that's another thing that Howie said, and this was kind of ridiculous in Howie said. He's like, there could be, you know, a catastrophe going on outside the building. I wouldn't know about it. Yet last year, he said when the Eagles took Hurts, he said, I knew things were going to get a little bumpy. So
pick
Howie
aside,
knows
Howie.
What's going on.
He knows.
And Howie knew going into that press conference that this video was out there and knew.
And now he's
going
to go answer to it because Donahoe couldn't get on board. And he knows that
right.
That's the first question he's going to get.
Exactly. Let's go to Jay in Philly. What's up, Jay?
Yeah, how you doing, Tom?
Good. How you doing, man?
I get hard to be on board with, I guess, when you're working with Howie Roseman. And he seems like a guy that, you know, saying a lot of people wouldn't like working with. I don't know. I just, it's something about him, and just, you know, like a little a rat or, I don't know. He just has a weasel quality about him, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean, I would say there are certainly a lot of people who have worked with him that do not like him, and that's
okay.
Clear. I mean, well, Lewis,
well, maybe Tom, though.
Lewis Riddick, for one, you can tell on that Monday night football game with the Eagles in Seattle, Lewis Riddick is not a big fan of Howie, and they worked together in the past. So.
Oh, yeah, well, I'm not surprised.
Yeah.
There's two picks I wasn't a fan of. This is just me, but I'm not a big fan of taking injured players out of college. You know, I would have went with Josh Myers, the center from Ohio State.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, I mean, this guy may turn out to be good, but I mean, four surgeries. I mean, I'm just, you know, we're a rebuilding team, so I want guys who, you know, saying is going to be able to play. I mean, I'm not sure this guy. I mean, he's an offensive lineman, and he couldn't stay healthy in college, and now NFL is even more physical. You got stronger, you know, defensive linemen pushing you and stuff like that. I mean, I hope this guy's be wearing thick braces on his ankles and stuff like that. You know what I'm saying? Because four surgeries, oh, I could see if it was one, but four, like that's a little bit alarming right there. So
yeah, no, Jay.
Yeah, that's just me. I just wouldn't take players that are injured, severely injured like that in college. If you got like something like a little hamstring or something,
right?
That's not a problem. But like, you know, That's some serious stuff right there.
No, it's definitely no, and it's. I'll let you finish, but it is concerning. But Howie did say that what he thought was different was an offensive lineman as opposed to Sidney Jones at corner, where, you know, corners are more likely to get hurt again, I guess. And, you know, Brandon Brooks, I guess, if you're looking for some hope that a guy can recover. I mean, Brandon Brooks has had several significant injuries and he's recovered, so that would be the hope. But I get why you'd be concerned.
Yeah, and the Milton Williams pick, like, I heard you had a caller earlier called him a beast. Now, I watched college football, and I was watching, you know, looking at draft sites. I never even heard of this guy, you know what I'm saying? So, and I watched his, like, you know, a lot of his highlight tapes, you know, after the Eagles drafted him, and nothing. I looked at the little scouting thing on ESPN, and they was talking about how his frame is undersized and stuff like that. Like, you know, so I don't really know, you know, about this dude. All the other picks I'm fine with. I like the Devontae Smith pick. I like the running back. I mean, Miles Sanders, you may want to watch out because this guy right here, I like him more than Miles Sanders coming out of college. Gainwell.
Right.
From Memphis.
Yeah.
That's about it. I agree with Mike, though. I do think this team is going to be terrible, especially defensively. I mean, you see the receivers and tight ends they got to go against this year. I know they got Eric Williams from
Minnesota at linebacker, and I tweeted, asked some Vikings fans about him. They was like, he's the average linebacker, you know, nothing more, nothing less.
Well, he's still better than all the Eagles linebackers.
I think they're going to give up over 30 points a game, to be honest with you, the Eagles defense. I think they're going to be horrible.
Yeah, I don't know about that, Jay. I appreciate it, man. But, yeah, I appreciate the call. I don't think they're going to be that bad. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't think they're going to be that bad. I think the corner position is an issue. Now, Howie did say that they have time to address it, and they do. I mean, and again, I don't like to go back constantly to 2016, 2017, but going into 2017, the Eagles at this point had very little at corner. I mean, going into that training camp, I think their starting corners were Jalen Mills, and I don't even know who the other starting corner was, because it ended up being Darby, but they traded it. Yeah, it was Rasul Douglas who ended up being the starting corner.
That's right. They traded for Darby in like August.
They traded for Darby. They traded Jordan Matthews for Darby, and then Darby got hurt week one, and Rasul Douglas stepped in and was the starting corner, I believe. Who did they play week two?
That was 2017?
2017. Yeah, and Rasul Douglas stepped in.
They lost that Chiefs game in KC.
Yeah, they lost the Chiefs game. And then, yeah, Rasul Douglas, I believe, was the starter moving forward. So you have time to address it. What it tells me in the meantime is that in a zone scheme, they believe Avante Maddox can play on the outside, at least if they need to. I certainly think they will add a corner, whether that's through trade. They have a ton of picks next year. So they certainly have picks to work with if they want to trade for a veteran, which can happen during camp. We'll see how it all plays out. But again, like, I'm okay with not forcing a pick. Like, if you don't think there's a corner worth taking, and at 37, I think Mike in South Philly's kind of reasoning was right on point, where if you think Asante Samuel Jr. is going to be a decent player, but you think Landon Dickerson can be an all-pro player, you got to take the all-pro player. And you can't worry about positional need. You just got to take the better guy. And generally, I think that's a good way to go, and we'll see. But I like the way the Eagles went with a lot of these picks, and I like the fact they're not trying to force their needs. 215-592-9494. When we get back, I do need to get to what's happened in the Phillies games the last couple nights. Two very entertaining games. One worked in the Phillies' favor. The other one Saturday night. I got to go off again on these umpires. I've been doing it all year. I feel like it's gotten worse this year than ever. But we'll talk a little bit about the Phillies-Mets series when we get back. And a big Sunday night baseball game coming up. We'll see if the Eagles can get – or the Eagles. We'll see if the Phillies can get back to 500 again for like the seventh straight time as they win and lose alternately, I guess. I'm losing my mind here tonight. I'm saying pimp instead of fist bump. We'll get to the Phillies when we get back. I'm Tom Kelly, Sports Radio 94 WIP. Sports Radio 94 WIP. I'm Tom Kelly with you until 6 a.m. In the 4 o'clock hour, we will let you hear the press conference, post-draft press conference, Howie Roseman, Andy Weidel, and Nick Sirianni on Saturday as they address everything that went on this weekend in regards to the draft picks. Some interesting things from those three guys as far as the selections that were made. And one, you know, the more I hear Nick Sirianni talk, by the way, the more I am encouraged. Like, obviously, we won't know anything until they actually play and they're actually on the field and we see what kind of coach he is. But the guy does seem to know football and seems to have a very good idea of what he wants to do, how he wants to do it. And I really like what I heard from him generally in talking about, like, he doesn't have a specific system and that he will mold his system to the strength of his players, because as much as I like Doug, that was not something Doug did very well. I mean, Doug, I think, was part of the reason the Eagles drafted a guy like Rager, because Doug wanted a guy that would fit his system, and I don't think that's the right way to go. I think you got to adjust and just look at New England. They change constantly. They change from year to year. They change from week to week. And it's the way you got to be to succeed in this league. So we'll see with Sirianni. But the things I hear from him, I am encouraged by. But I do want to talk about the Phillies for a minute here. As they are playing a three-gamer with the Mets this week. And Phillies now atop the division at 13-14. This wasn't this supposed to be the best division in baseball, Dan?
It was,
what,
yeah.
What is going on here?
The NL least, as I'm calling it, is really taking a page out of the NFC least playbook. The difference is the NFC East was not supposed to be good. The NL East was. It's still early. It's only been through April. But the fact that they have a share of first place after a month and a day with a below 500 record is ridiculous, considering you have teams like the Mets, who had a big offseason, like the Braves, who are a four-time defending NL East champion and went 7 with the Dodgers last year. No one running away with this division right now, so maybe someone will just win slightly above 500. It's hope for the Phils.
Yeah, you got the Phillies, Nats, and Mets all tied for the division lead right now, all a game below 500. And I mean, this series so far this weekend has been very exciting. We'll get to what happened Saturday in a minute, in which a ridiculous call, in which the Phillies probably got robbed of a game here. But first, I want to go back to Friday night, because I was watching this, and this was great. And this is, I mean, for baseball needs more of this kind of stuff, because you're at the end of April. It's starting to become the dog days of the season, and you need some energy coming from somewhere. And Jose Alvarado provided it after striking out Dominic Smith in a big spot.
The stretch and the pitch. Swing and a miss. He struck him out 100 miles an hour. The fastball from Alvarado. Your call was correct, sir.
That's right.
No runs, one hit, three left. We're going to the bottom of the eighth. It's a 2-2 game.
Well, I don't think that was the one. But Alvarado had struck out Smith on Friday. Was that the one from Friday night? There might be a longer one.
I'll look for it.
Yeah. But Alvarado struck out Dominic Smith, and then fireworks ensued here as they start barking at each other. Alvarado's yelling at Smith, saying the pitch is down the middle, and it looked like Dominic Smith had complained to the umpire, or had asked the umpire, was that a strike? And Alvarado saying, yeah, it was a strike. It was right down the middle. Smith swings and misses. Then they start jawing at each other. Alvarado's yelling at Smith, and here's the call of the strikeout.
Smith waiting. And the 3-2 pitch. Swing and a miss. He struck him out. Alvarado shouting out at Dominic Smith and gets Dominic Smith. And now he throws his glove. It's off to the side. He and Smith are going at it. The benches have emptied. Jeremy Rehack, the plate umpire, is in between the two of them. Now Alvarado pushed back by the rest of the Phillies. A big scrum just to the right of the plate. The bullpens have emptied now as they come streaming out of the pen. Well, this goes back to earlier in the season, Alvarado getting yelled at from the Met bench, and it was Dominic Smith who did so, and Alvarado, after striking out Smith, was shouting into the air.
And I forgot about that earlier, but yeah, this goes back a few weeks ago, where Alvarado had thrown around somebody in the Mets, and then Smith was yelling at him, and it's great. And they're yelling. The bench is clear. And here was Dominic Smith after the game on Jose Alvarado.
I mean, I don't mind people pimping strikeouts, pimping stuff on the field. I've never been a player like that, but I don't mind it. I love it. But I mean, him pointing at me, coming after me and stuff like that. I'm a grown ass man, you know, come meet me then if you really got a problem and we could really handle it. So that's how I look at that issue. You know, he waited for his team to grab him and stuff, but you know, I'm right there. And he could meet me in the tunnel tomorrow if you really want to get after it.
I absolutely love it. Like, this stuff, this is what baseball needs, because baseball can be boring sometimes, and you get into the newness of the season at the beginning of April. It kind of gets people in, but this is when, you know, I'd say casual baseball fans start to stop paying as much attention. You won't watch every day. You'll check in, you'll check out, but especially Phillies Mets. Like, this is what Phillies Mets is supposed to be. Like, we talk about the Eagles rivalries, and obviously their rivalries with the Cowboys and Giants are a huge deal, but from like 07 to 09, there was no better rivalry in Philadelphia than Phillies Mets. It was incredible.
It is. And it's very rare. It's been a while since both of these teams have been good. And we're talking about the NL East standings. I wouldn't say that both of these teams are good right now, but they're both in it. And they're both anticipating being good. The Mets made a lot of noise this offseason with new ownership. The Phillies anticipating taking a step this year. You have two fan bases that are into it, fans that are eager to get back in the ballpark, and now two teams that are really growing to hate each other. It's great. It's phenomenal.
Yeah, and you get that win. And then Saturday night, and this was frustrating. Phillies tied 4-4. Zach Wheeler, it was funny. I was out driving at the time listening to the top of the first, and whenever LA just gets irritated, he just goes off, and he was very irritated that the play that McCutchen didn't make in the first was ruled a double instead of an error, and that is stupid. I mean, when they give LA guys hits for everything.
LA has been, so I've been cutting audio a number of days here. He has been on the scorers at home, especially.
Well, it's ridiculous.
But it's continuous thing. Like, this isn't the first time or the second.
Oh no, this is years.
This
long.
Is going years long. But yeah, he is like furious this year as much as any at the scoring.
So he's going off on that. Wheeler struggles in the first, gives up four, but the Phillies fight back, tie the game, and then just a ridiculous call where Andrew McCutchen's running second base. Lindor fields it, tries to tag him, can't, throws the first, runner safe, and they rule McCutchen out of the base path. McCutchen was not out of the base path. The Phillies would have had two runners on with one out in the seventh inning. Instead, a double play to end the inning, and in the end, Conforto ends up homering off Hector in the ninth, and Hector Neris, man, I like Hector Neris in general, but this happens too much. It just happens too much. But the Phillies should have had an opportunity to win that game. And I don't know is this, Dan, something that, is it just me, or have the umps been especially bad this year?
It's so, like, I was telling Ricky, it's never a good thing when the umpires are the headline of a game. And it's happened a few times here, and for what it's worth,
I feel like it's every week.
Well, you had the Conforto play up in New York. You had, and this is the second time the Mets have benefited from it, by the way. I was saying, to play contrarian, the Phillies have now benefited and gotten screwed. Like, Alec Boehm did not touch home plate,
right,
and that was a reviewable play, and that was the umpires stealing the show. And
but
they still
that's
got
another
it
wrong. One, right.
That's so the Boehm play, the Conforto play, there's this play, there was, did you see the play
just
in the Brewers game the other night?
No, I did not see that.
Oh, I got to show you this video during the break. It was a horrendous, they said that there was, what was it, that the runner went out, not out of the base path, but that there was obstruction on the fielder, and they ruled the guy safe, and it was a horrible call. So that's another one you didn't even know about. No, there's been like four or five really bad game-changing blunders by the umpires this season.
And just in general, I mean, they've had C.B. Buckner behind the plate twice. It's like, it's terrible.
Brutal.
These guys, like, there's no point anymore. I've said it before, just get rid of the umpires. Get rid of them altogether. Have the automated strike zone, safe out calls, fair foul calls, just have somebody in the booth review it, takes 2 seconds, and have them do it. But these umpires, they are so bad, and it's just terrible. It really is. And baseball, the umpires have been a problem for a long time, but they are getting worse, and it is ridiculous, because this is the one sport where it should be easy. Like, football, basketball, I feel like you kind of need umpires or referees in real time. Baseball, you really don't, and it's infuriating to watch them get so many calls wrong.
So, I agree with you. So, there, I would be in favor of expanding replay. I'm not sure if I would get rid of umpires altogether.
I would. I think they're useless.
So here's where they really did themselves in, right? Ever since every broadcast in baseball has the box up for the strike zone, now you know it's a ball and a strike. And the only one in the entire stadium who can't see, like with pinpoint precision, what's a ball and a strike, is the umpire.
Right, so why do you need him?
Well, you would still need them there because you can't review everything. Like, it would slow down the game even
more.
I don't think
it would, though. Like, it,
for safe and out calls, I think it would.
I don't think it, well, maybe a little bit, but they review them anyway.
But you can't review, but then you would be reviewing every single play.
And then they don't even, but most of them are clear cut. Like,
you would have an umpire out there. So what they've been doing in the minor leagues is you have like a guy with an earpiece and he goes ball or strike based upon what he's told.
Right.
There are still sometimes technical difficulties. Like there was a pitch that bounced in the strike zone in the minor leagues and the thing called it a strike and the umpire has to be like, okay, obviously that's a ball. You have routine plays that you have umpires there for, and then you still get to challenge a game for the managers, and that's when you go to the umpire upstairs, the same way you do in every other sport with replay nowadays.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't even need them. And the fact is, they're a detriment because you don't even get the calls right because the umpires don't want to overturn their own calls.
Well, that's the ridiculous thing is that you need the umpire has to be a umpire separate from the umpires union or whatever you want to call it in New York ruling on these things so they don't feel like they're superseding because they want to feel important. I get it. But that's why they don't want balls and strikes being taken away. But get it right. Yeah. Get someone in New York to just be like, this is the correct call.
Yeah, it's been terrible, and it's just getting worse. 215-592-9494. Matt and Hamilton will get you after the break. I'm Tom Kelly, Sports Radio 94 WIP. Sports Radio 94 WIP. I'm Tom Kelly with you on a Sunday morning. Also be back the next three nights in for Big Daddy Graham. Let's get back to the phones. Go to our buddy Matt in Hamilton. What's up, Matt?
Hey, Tom. How are you?
Good. How you doing, man?
Good. I got a quick point about Nick Sirianni.
Sure.
I just wanted to possibly touch base on some of the draft picks before I do that.
Yeah, sure.
The McPherson, I like the line, the center, or who can play other positions.
Dickerson?
If he's going to play, yeah, Dickerson.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I don't know much about the third-round guy other than Mel Kiper had just positive things to say about him. That's all I know about the kid. And he had nothing negative to say about him. But I was looking at the McPherson tape.
Yeah.
And he seems like a corner. Like, he originally committed to Penn State. I don't know if you knew that. And then he had to transfer to Texas Tech because Penn State had, like, five corners freshman year in front of him. And he was recruited by Alabama and Ohio State. So I was looking at his tape. He just seems like he's just, like, quick to the ball. Like, he's quick to the ball. He makes plays. He had multiple interceptions last season. He played in the Big 12, but he seems, like, more aggressive than Avante Maddox would be. Like, he might be a better tackler. So, and Avante Maddox was taking the fourth round. So I kind of like that pick.
Yeah, well, what I've seen is that he's pretty versatile, Matt, that he can play inside and outside. He can play in both man and zone. So, you know, he definitely needs to improve a little bit. But from what I read, and obviously, you know, I haven't seen him a ton in college. But, you know, from what I'm reading, it is a pick that is getting some pretty positive reviews.
Yeah, and so I like that pick, and we got the running back too, which people seem to like.
People really like the running back.
Yeah, so we got some things that we need. Maybe the cornerback position will shore up a little bit, but we still got some question marks there. But other than that, I mean, before I get to Nick Sirianni, I understand why they did. I called the other night, I said they were like Devontae, but I understand why they did it. But there is a list out there since the 2000 season of wide receivers under 170 pounds that have been taken that have been at value. The only people at the top of that list are Deshaun, of all teams, Deshaun, Todd Pinkston, and Marquise Brown are the best. After that, it's a bunch of no neighbors. But obviously, he had a great season, a tremendous season, Heisman Trophy winning season, and broke all kinds of school records at Alabama. So maybe it'll be a different story. But about Nick Sirianni, I think in front of the camera, he might be just that type of guy that just has some uncomfortability issues, especially coming to a new city like Philly. But behind the scenes, maybe he's that leadership schematic type of guy that is just going to change the scene. I mean, what do you think about that?
Yeah.
He could be that type of guy that's just going to change things for us in Philly if he really can coach schematically and be a leadership in the locker room.
Yeah, no, Matt, I agree. And I think I don't think you can really take much from these press conferences. Like, this is a guy who, honestly, I don't think he's has much experience talking to the media. Like, I in Indianapolis, probably spoke once a week, and that media is not nearly as you know, scrutinizing as the media is here. And now you're being the head coach of the Philadelphia Eagles. It's a much different job, and I think it's something he'll grow into and he'll get better at, but yeah, I think behind the scenes, when he's just talking football, he will probably be very comfortable in that area and get along well with the players. Because when you hear him talk, when he's just talking about football, he seems very comfortable.
Yeah, and he seems passionate, and it's different than Doug is the other thing. Like, not to say that we knew something different than Doug, but we probably did. But Doug was just like, I don't think Sirianni's even the type of guy, like, after a season or two, it's like telling the media off, telling the fans, you know, in turn telling the fans off, and you know, he has controversy with other players. I don't think he's that type of guy. I think he handles things in a different way, and maybe even just the way he handles things is going to be better for this team and better for the organization. And we'll see if Howie and Lori did a good job at hiring him. So, I mean, we'll see. But I hope. His schematics and all that really does work out. I think we got our head coach. So
yeah,
thank you, man.
No, appreciate it, Matt. Thanks. And yeah, cool. I agree. And I've come around on Sirianni a little bit. And you know, I was down on the hire when the Eagles made it because I thought that they hired him to fix Carson Wentz. Now I am much more positive about it after they move on from Wentz and hearing Sirianni talk. When you get past the you know, if he stutters a little bit or seems uncomfortable, and you just listen to actually what he's saying, the things that he says make a lot of sense. And the things that he says make me feel good about him as a football coach. As we talked about, won't know until they get on the field, but I am feeling much better about Nick Sirianni than I was when he was hired. 215-592-9494. I'm Tom Kelly. When we get back, we'll do a quick update on the Sixers here as they get back to action Sunday after a good week. So we'll do that when we get back. I'm Tom Kelly, Sports Radio 94 WIP. Sports Radio 94 WIP, I'm Tom Kelly. As I told you earlier, in the next segment, I'll let you hear the press conference, Nick Sirianni, Howie Roseman, and Andy Weidel talking about the last few days and how everything went down with the Eagles in the draft. But real quick, I did want to do a Sixers update here as we're heading down the home stretch of the season. Sixers now with, I believe, 10, 11 games left in the season here. 9 games left, actually. As they enter play on Sunday, a half game back of the Brooklyn Nets. And Sixers starting a 3-game road trip that I think could determine their season. Now, they're coming off a great week where, you know, obviously 2 weeks ago, Sixers lose to the Warriors, Suns, then 2 back-to-back games in Milwaukee, and things were looking pretty dire. You know, you're missing Embiid for the 1 game. You're missing Harris for a few games, missing Ben Simmons all week. And, you know, it was concerning. But the way this team bounced back this week, the way they were able to, against teams they should beat, you know, the Thunder and then the Hawks twice. Hawks, one of those games without Trae Young, they were beat up. The Sixers to win those games, to win them as handily as they did, was important because you were able to manage minutes. And now you should be able to play everybody next 2 nights. And a weird back-to-back here, Sunday, Monday, where you go to San Antonio on Sunday night, then Chicago Monday night, then back to Houston on Wednesday. So an odd 3 games and 4 night stretch here. But the Sixers, a half game back of the Nets. The Nets start this critical week for them where they have back-to-back with Milwaukee. Game 1 of that on Sunday. Then they play again Tuesday. And this is the area where the Sixers should be able to make up ground. But you got San Antonio, then you have Chicago and Houston. If you can win all 3 of these games before coming back home, I think the Sixers are going to be in good shape. You look at Brooklyn, 2 games at Milwaukee, then at Dallas, then at Denver. And Denver is continued to play very well without Jamal Murray. Nikola Jokic, I would say, has solidified his MVP trophy for this year, his top rank in that regard. And these next four games are where if the Sixers are going to pull away, get the one seed, it's going to happen right now. And these two games in Milwaukee this week for the Nets, if you're a Sixers fan, you want Milwaukee to win those games. I wouldn't be worried about Milwaukee jumping the Sixers. Sixers have 3-game lead on them. So hopefully the Bucks can take care of business, help the Sixers out in a national TV game on Sunday afternoon. Next up, we'll let you hear the press conference. Howie Rosen, Nick Sirianni, and Andy Weidel. That's coming up. I'm Tom Kelly, Sports Radio 94 WIP.
If you owe $10,000 or more in credit card debt, medical bills, or personal loans, help is here. More and more Americans turn to credit cards to get by. National Debt Relief is helping qualified clients reduce what they owe. For many, continuing to struggle making minimum monthly payments could take years to pay off. National Debt Relief has already helped over 550,000 Americans reduce their debt by negotiating directly with their creditors. When you call, you'll be amazed at how much you can save and how quickly you can become debt-free. If you want off the debt treadmill, visit NationalDebtRelief.com today. You don't need to declare bankruptcy, and you may qualify for significant debt relief. To find out what savings you may qualify for, simply visit NationalDebtRelief.com. That's NationalDebtRelief.com.
Oh, it's such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
I meant those blackout motorized shades.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. I installed these and then got some from my mom. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Hall of Fame son.
They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Blinds.com is the GOAT.
Visit Blinds.com now for up to 45% off site-wide, plus a free professional measure. Rules and restrictions apply.
Oh, could this vintage store be any cuter?
Right? And the best part? They accept Discover.
Accept Discover? In a little place like this? I don't think so, Jennifer.
Oh, yeah, huh? Discover's accepted where I like to shop. Come on, baby, get with the times.
Right, so we shouldn't get the parachute pants?
These are making a comeback. I think.
Discover is accepted at 99% of places that take credit cards nationwide. Based on the February 2025 Nielsen report.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.